This episode is brought to you in part by AG1. Taking care of your health should be simple, and with AG1, it really is. Every scoop includes ingredients for gut energy, stress, and immune support. It is just one drink, folks, and you will have all your bases covered. So if you want to replace your multivitamins and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/commons. That's drinkag1.com/commons. Check it out. This episode is brought to you in part by Rotman Executive Programs. Now, I'm sure you've heard of this newfangled thing called generative AI. Well, the Rotman School of Management is here to help you dive in to the risks and rewards of this new technology. Elevate your skills to advance your career and future-proof your organization with Rotman's Generative AI and Organizational Transformation Program. Visit uft.me/RotmanAI to learn more. Once again, that's www.uft.me/RotmanAI. Gabriel Oladua has always had two great passions in life. The first is history.
With history, I don't know. I just had a curious mind. I wanted to know what happened in the past. That's all. I just wanted to know what happened in the past.
And the second is farming.
Being born and raised in the countryside, I saw agriculture, especially from my father. He did beekeeping. He did different things in agriculture. So I lived it. I slept in it. I worked it. You know, I breathed it.
Gabriel was born and raised in St. Lucia, a tiny island nation in the Caribbean. He was always academically gifted. It helped that he spoke English at home. Most St. Lucians spoke a French Creole, but their classes were in English.
It was really a struggle for the average person to do well or do average in school. For me, the good thing is my mother insisted that we speak English. That made a difference for me.
And when it came time to pursue a higher education, he decided to study agriculture. After he completed his studies, Gabriel worked a number of jobs. He was a teacher, a public servant, and a loan officer at a bank. But his real dream was to be self-employed. So for years, he slowly built up a number of businesses on the side. By the time he ventured out on his own in 2009, he had a number of different businesses. A small greenhouse where he grew cucumbers for export, a beekeeping operation. He sold farmers supplies like fertilizer and acted as a middleman for crop sales. And he ran his own general store. By that point, Gabriel had two young children. His wife had passed away years earlier, and he was raising his son on his own while his daughter lived with his sister-in-law. But with his education and his business acumen, Gabriel had built up a comfortable, stable existence. Life was good. But in a few short years, forces beyond his control would reduce him to penury, sending him down a path that would lead him to a foreign country thousands of miles away. First, the banana industry, which was St. Lucia's main agricultural crop, had been devastated over the last decade. Since independence, the island nation had a preferential trading relationship with the European Union since it was a former British colony.
We were exporting to England. England is our mother country, so we had preferential treatment. Americans, who are the small guys to get preference, right? It should be open.
The U.S. took the case to the World Trade Organization, and the WTO nullified St. Lucia's special trade status.
So with the WTO ruling, we were elbowed out. We could not compete with America.
Then, invasive diseases further ravaged banana production. Even though many of his businesses relied on banana growers, Gabriel still had his greenhouse, his beehives, and his general store. He thought he'd be fine. But then...
No community in the Castries Basin was spared the fury of Hurricane Thomas. Castries North, East, South, and Southeast were all decimated by the tropical system, which left a trail of destruction in its wake.
Hurricane Thomas in 2010. The hurricane ravaged his apiary and the greenhouse, and even his general store became a victim.
That hurricane, it was a lot of rain, a lot of flooding, but also a lot of landslides. And with a lot of landslides, it means a lot of the top soils were washed away and so on. So it really drove people to the bottom, rock bottom. The east, which is where I live, was separated from the west, which is where the capital is. And we have a centralized, we do not have a decentralized system. We have a central, everything is in the city. So we're cut off from the city for a whole month.
It was almost impossible for him to get supplies to sell.
And even though I could get the supplies, the people, my customers, their crop is destroyed. Their livelihood is destroyed. And I was desperate because the economy wasn't doing well. I couldn't get a job. I was at the lowest point in my life. With a family to support, being unemployed, no income, that was the lowest point in my life.
It was then that Gabriel started to think about Canada. Gabriel was already familiar with the Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program. The program consists of a series of bilateral agreements between Canada and a number of countries in the Caribbean and Central America, including St. Lucia. Workers leave their home countries for a period of as short as 6 weeks and as long as 8 months to do farm labor in Canada. Gabriel was desperate. He wanted to stay close to his children, 12-year-old Ganya and 10-year-old Christy, but he was running out of options. So, he applied. Now, Gabriel's always had a great impression of our country. In fact, his high school had been built by the Canadian International Development Agency.
And the 3 years I spent at that secondary school in St. Lucia, which was a gift from the government and people of Canada, and it was during that time I studied about Canada. Canada stood out. Canada is not just a country. Canada is a standard. People look up to Canada.
Gabriel was a strong applicant. He had a valid passport. He was under 44 years old. He had character references and a clean bill of health. And of course, he had a lot of agricultural experience. So he got the job. And aside from having to be separated from his family, he didn't really have any concerns. So when a government agent said that he needed Gabriel to sign some paperwork, he didn't look at it too closely.
Basically, the government is a recruiting agency. However, they will not take the time to explain to you, or no, just sign it. Like they fit perfectly in a well-coordinated system.
They played him an instructional video about what he could expect. It showed workers, most of whom looked Latino, working in the fields under the sun and working very quickly. The labor looked difficult, but not like anything Gabriel couldn't handle. What the video didn't tell him was what kind of life he should expect in Canada. It had instead a very specific message.
You're an ambassador. You're an ambassador. What kind of ambassador? I don't know.
On a January day in 2012, Gabriel left St. Lucia for a brand new job in Canada. After spending almost a whole day in Barbados on layover, he flew into Toronto Pearson Airport. It was night by the time they arrived.
I left my home under the cover of darkness. And that's the thing about Canada. Everything is quiet. It's a dirty secret. Quiet secret.
At the airport, they were loaded into buses. The buses had no heat. None of the workers had been told to prepare for how cold Canada could be in the winter. They understood it was colder than St. Lucia, but it's not like you can buy a winter coat easily in the Caribbean. And as they shivered together on the bus, a St. Lucian government representative came on board. He checked the paperwork, and he did a head count. And after that, the government representative disappeared. And finally, they were dropped off and told to enter a building that was to be their new home, on a farm outside of Leamington, Ontario. There was absolutely no heat. Later on, Gabriel would learn that there had been a mix-up and that they'd been sent to the wrong bunkhouse. But in that moment, shivering in the cold, marooned in a foreign country and surrounded by people he didn't know, Gabriel's mind drifted back into the history he'd learned so much about.
It reminded me so much of the slave trade. With getting to the bunkhouse without heat, that reminded me of people packed in a slave ship with all strangers. We are separated from each other, from our families and so on. And that's what it reminded me. There are lots, so many parallels. But I still trusted it because it was a legal program. I trusted that.
But even then, Gabriel still had faith. After all, his own government had signed off on it. And this was Canada, the same country that had built the school that he had attended. The country that had such a sterling reputation around the world for human rights. But over the next 4 years, Gabriel's faith would be tested over and over again. By the end, he'd have none left. Today, Gabriel fights to upend the program that brought him to Canada. To Gabriel, this is about more than just a government program. It's a continuation of a struggle that goes deep into his own family's history. Back to when his ancestors were brought over from Africa and India to be exploited for their labor.
And as I keep telling people, I have 3 legs. 1 leg of slavery from my mother's side another leg of indentured labor from my father's side and coming to Canada to take part in another form of indentured, exploited labor. From day one, I realized that was a third leg, and I had to fight to break up that cycle.
I'm Arshi Mann, and this is Commons.
More after the break.
This episode is brought to you in part by AG1. Now, watching the most recent eclipse genuinely made me feel like a small piece of nothing on a rock floating around the never-ending galaxy, but it also made me feel like I want to make sure that I'm here for the next one, and the next one, and the next one. So, taking care of your health, it doesn't have to be time-consuming and difficult. Say goodbye to the tens of nutritional pill bottles in your cupboard because AG1 replaces multiple health supplements like multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and more in just one simple scoop. Now, my favorite ingredients are folate, magnesium, and ashwagandha, mostly because they're fun to say. Just try that again. Ashwagandha. Isn't that great? So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/commons. That's drinkag1.com/commons. Check it out. This episode is also brought to you in part by Rotman Executive Programs. Now, it can be hard to make sense of how we're supposed to feel about AI. On one side, we're like, wow, AI art, that's kind of cool. And on the other side, there's the question of if this is the beginning of the robot uprising. But whatever your take is, Rotman School of Management is here to help you dive into the world of generative AI and make sense of it all. Rotman's Generative AI and Organizational Transformation Program will help you elevate your skills to advance your career or future-proof your organization. We'll help you equip yourself with the tools to create a strategic roadmap for success and help you discover practical applications for AI while learning from industry experts over 3 days at Rotman. From upskilling employees to ethical concerns, Rotman's AI program will make sure you have the confidence to tackle this important technology. Visit www.uoft.me/RotmanAI to learn more. Again, that's www.uoft.me/RotmanAI.
Canada's temporary foreign worker programs are the subject of a scathing report from the United Nations. The UN Special Rapporteur on Contemporary Forms of Slavery says the programs for foreign agricultural workers are, quote, a breeding ground for modern forms of slavery.
Migrant workers form the backbone of Canada's agricultural economy.
Political class or policymakers would want to try to compare migrant schemes to immigrant labors, and you just can't, because peeps under these programs do not have any labor or social mobility. There is no ability to live here as equals.
My name is Chris Ramsrup. I'm an organizer with Justice for Migrant Workers. I also teach at U of T.
Chris has been involved with organizing migrant farm workers for more than 2 decades. He first got involved when he worked for the UFW, an American agricultural union that Cesar Chavez co-founded. Back in 2001, there was a wildcat strike of seasonal farm workers outside of Leamington, Ontario.
We heard that a group of workers undertook this action. They were dropped off at the church, and then they were sent back home, repatriated.
And he says that he's consistently shocked by the conditions that he encounters.
But the images, it's surreal. It's like going back in another century. Just the conditions, the overcrowdedness, the bathrooms, the housing, the fear, the secrecy.
There are two programs at the heart of Canada's migrant farm worker labor force. The first is what Gabriel signed up for, the Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program.
The Seasonal Agricultural Worker was our first big labor migration scheme in agriculture. It started in 1966. It started with Jamaica first, and then it went to Trinidad, Barbados, the Organization of Caribbean States, and in 1974, Mexico. And, you know, predominantly they looked at this as workers being employed in soft fruits, peaches, apples, and tobacco.
Like other agricultural workers during the 1960s and 70s, these laborers had almost no rights. But there's a big difference between them and the Punjabi immigrants you heard about in our last episode. Seasonal agricultural workers have no right to stay in Canada, and their employment is completely tied to a single employer. Meaning, if that farm terminates their job, they're eligible to be immediately deported from the country. This program was explicitly racist from the start.
Historically, when the Dutch came or the English, the Dutch and English came as permanent residents. They were able to move freely. It's only when we started to bring in black workers where we saw the shift and changes of our policies.
When Canada reached a deal with Jamaica in 1966, they specifically ensured that these workers couldn't permanently move to the country in order to avoid, quote-unquote, racial problems, in the words of a federal bureaucrat at the time. The second program that exists today is the Temporary Foreign Worker Program. In 2002, the federal government opened a temporary foreign worker stream for agriculture, which allows farm owners to bring in migrant workers for up to 2 years. But just like seasonal agricultural workers, they don't have a pathway to permanent residency, and their presence in this country is tied to their specific employer. Because of the immense power imbalance, year after year, horror stories emerge about working on these farms. Abysmal living conditions, racial and sexual abuse, and worker deaths. An average of 2 migrant farm workers die in Canada every year.
We only in Ontario had agricultural workers under the Occupational Health and Safety Act starting in 2006, so it hasn't even been 20 years.
Today, nearly 40,000 seasonal and temporary workers are brought in every year to work Canadian farms, about half of them in Ontario. But when Gabriel Oladua first arrived in Canada, he knew about none of this. He didn't realize how many of his rights he had signed away when that government bureaucrat rushed him through his paperwork. After that first night shivering in the bunkhouse, Gabriel eventually got settled in and got to work. He would be working in a greenhouse, growing and picking tomatoes.
In St. Lucia, I operated a small greenhouse. But coming to Canada, my definition of a greenhouse is nothing. It's just a dot. That's not a greenhouse. My greenhouse is like 30 feet by 60 feet. That's a greenhouse. That's St. Lucia standard. But to come to something that's many, many, many football size, right? That changes the definition of everything. So the size of it, the layout. For example, one row of plants, I have 500 plants. Now, from day one, I was wondering how on earth would I, how much time, how long would I take to get in and out of that, right? Because that is just so, so crazy. That was intensive agriculture over an extensive area. That concept of a family farm, it's nowhere. It's so far from reality.
This wasn't farming like he was used to. This was agriculture at an industrial level. Gabriel soon discovered that the pace of work was relentless. Almost every movement, every action that the workers undertook was logged and timed. Every employee had a wristband with a key card, and after each individual action, they had to scan the key card and log precisely how long they had taken. It was a system of total surveillance.
The layout, everything was carefully planned. Each row was numbered, and you had to clock everything that you do, every activity that you do. So my supervisor doesn't have to be physically present to know where I am and what I'm doing or how long I'm taking, you know?
And at the end of every week, workers were ranked against each other on a chart that was posted publicly. If your name was in green, you did good. If it was in red, you were in trouble.
I'm accustomed to a fixed piece rate. What does that mean? Here's your task for the day. At the end of the day, you know you completed it, you know where it's. But in Canada, you never know where you stand because the pace of things vary. And I try to explain that by using my output. Like if this week I harvested 2,000 pounds, I may be in green. Next week I can harvest more than 2,000 pounds and I may not be in green because they keep shifting the goalposts.
Gabriel says that the chart was used as a threat by supervisors.
At least on 2 or 3 occasions, I was within earshot of the supervisor questioning my colleagues who were at the bottom, right? And the warning was very simple. Look at the chart. You can see the guys in green. That means the work can be done. The work can be done. Remember, in your country, there are 100 guys lined up willing to take your place. That was the message. So the message was clear. If you don't meet up the expectation, you'll not be requested.
Today, migrant farm workers are entitled to at least Sundays off and some holidays. But in Gabriel's first year, that wasn't the case. They worked every single day.
Sunday to Sunday, yes, and that was our life, being a migrant worker. Every day's workday, no holiday. Again, we excluded from a lot of things. We just fitted in whatever situation that was presented to us. We just fitted in. Why? At the end of the pay cycle, we want to know we have money to support our families.
And the pay, minimum wage, no overtime.
Working on minimum wage, no overtime pay, 25% of my income goes to my liaison service. So that means literally I was living below minimum wage, right?
The liaison service he's referring to is the branch of the St. Lucian government that sponsored him to come to Canada. Gabriel had a hard time adjusting to this new reality. During harvest time, it wasn't uncommon to work 66 hours a week. He began downing huge amounts of energy drinks just to keep pace. Despite the intensely physical nature of the work, he rarely rested.
I had to use energy drinks, and which was a common thing, something I never used in my home country. For me, I had to forego my washroom breaks. There were other things that I had to do. Often enough, we cut our lunch hour by 20, 30 minutes, and even starting work before time just to make sure we meet and exceed that.
Even though the cold of the Canadian winter was initially a shock to him, the greenhouse was warm, so he found that comfortable at first. But as the months went by and the heat of the Ontario summer set in, the greenhouse became almost unbearable.
Everything would be wet, including your socks and your shoes would be wet, soaking wet. The temperature is extremely, extremely. And the strange thing about Canada is, at that time, that's when you need a nice cool breeze. You don't get any breeze at all. And that is the devil. Yeah, that's the devil.
In Ontario, there are no heat protections for agricultural workers. And Chris Ramsarup says that this, too, has a racist origin.
So with our health and safety laws, Ontario still, for example, doesn't have heat protections for agricultural workers. And one of the ways that employers and government officials would correlate that is that you've got workers from the Global South, they could toughen these conditions out. They could handle the heat because they're from a Global South country without examining what these heat stress is going to undertake to all these workers' bodies.
When they weren't in the greenhouse, the workers spent most of their time in the bunkhouse.
The bunkhouse is on the farmer's property. My bunkhouse, the bunkhouse where I live, it was very long, maybe 120 feet, I'm not too sure. But there were 8 rooms in there. And in my room, there were 8 guys. It was 62 of us. Only one room had 6 guys. There was one kitchen with 16 burners, a free stove, 16 burners. So when you do the math, not enough appliances. Everything was a fight. Everything was a fight. You had to compete, not enough sink, right? 8 guys in a room. To use the shower, it's like you have to light up. Everything is a light up. It's a lineup. Basically, it tested every aspect of your life. Your patience, every aspect of your life has been tested.
It wasn't all bad. Like any communal living situation, some people were easy to get along with. Other folks had harder edges. But the most difficult part for everyone was the dearth of phones and the total lack of internet access. All anyone wanted to do was talk to their families back home.
That is a real issue that migrant workers face, family separation. And you know, communication is a basic thing. And we're coming to a developed country. And to be in a bunkhouse where there's no internet, and the phones that were there, the 2 phones, you cannot receive calls. The 4 years I spent there, we tried to get internet there without success. And let me talk from my end, from my perspective. Earning minimum wage, no overtime, and all the standards that Canadians are accustomed to, we could not enjoy that. We excluded from overtime pay and so on. To buy a phone card, literally, my income wasn't enough.
All of this was hard on Gabriel. His work was exhausting, his living situation was demeaning, and being away from his family was heartbreaking. While he was away, his children's academic performance began to suffer. When he returned to St. Lucia, he didn't know if he wanted to come back. But he soon discovered that the program makes you dependent on it.
That particular program, the maximum you can come to Canada for is 8 months. Some people come as little as 6 weeks. 6 weeks. So when we come for 8 months, we go back home for 4 months. Who would want to employ you for 4 months? If they're employment, or who would want? That guy is going back just now. Who would want to employ you, right? And even though we get gainful employment, the returns, because of exchange and so on, the returns are not enough to keep it going. Or you have to pay so much for transportation or other things. So you're always caught in that cycle, right? You become dependent on it, right? And that's the reality of it.
For one, a significant percentage of his wages were spent paying off the flights to come to Canada. And the St. Lucian government held on to 25% of his total income. That was framed as a forced savings plan, something to benefit workers. In practice, it's used to try to ensure workers don't try to stay in Canada without documents. But the government sometimes takes months and months and months to pay that money out, leaving workers in financial crunches and incentivizing them to re-enroll and come back to Canada the next year. And so, that's what Gabriel did. He returned to Canada for the next 4 years. Exhaustion and overwork aren't the only problems for migrant farm workers. Every year, men and women come to Canada for a temporary job and never end up returning home.
Fatalities still are a serious issue. About 2 years ago, a worker was building a greenhouse. He fell off from the top of the roof and passed away. The employer got a slap on the wrist. There was a prosecution. I would argue that it's not enough. Workers are dying here in Canada, but also many workers are dying in the home country as a result of, we believe, pesticides and chemicals. And I do not think at this point in time, unless there's further steps taken, nothing will systemically will change.
Gabriel's first brush with activism came in his first year in Canada. In February 2012, just a month after he arrived, 10 migrant farm workers and their Canadian driver were killed in a bus crash in Hampstead, Ontario. The news quickly spread to Gabriel's farm.
I came to earn my livelihood to support my family, and nowhere in the picture was death associated with that. So for the first time, we had migrant workers die. So that caught our attention. It caught my attention. Because I'm coming on a legal program, everything is right. You don't hear the injustices. So everything must be right. And suddenly, out of the blue, you had so many workers dying in one accident. So that caught my attention. So I was really concerned.
That summer, Justice for Migrant Workers organized a vigil in Kingston, Ontario, and Gabriel received an invite from someone in his bunkhouse. So he decided to go.
And it was a Sunday. I went to the event, and then I realized that the very issues that I was having with difficult working, difficult living conditions, that's what the group was about. The difficult condition, that the accident could have been prevented, that it's because of long hours, because the workers are excluded from so many protections. That's when I realized that there's a group. Basically, they were the voice for we, the voices.
A number of people went up on stage and spoke. They talked about the terrible conditions they had to endure. A Jamaican man who lost part of his leg in a workplace accident talked about how the power imbalances ensured that farm workers would continue to get injured. Gabriel had only come to the rally to observe, but a feeling started to well up inside of him. He wanted to go on stage.
From my very first day in Canada, I discovered so many red flags. I wanted to vent it. I wanted to talk about it. I wanted to do something about it. And it was there I realized that platform was there, right there, presented to me right there and then. And I didn't hesitate to.
Gabriel talked about how he believed that only through collective action would anything change for people like them. After the vigil, Gabriel witnessed just how inhumane the system could be. He ended up on a Skype call with one of the survivors of the bus crash. The man had been badly injured and was still hospitalized. And he spoke about how Canadian immigration authorities were at that very moment moving forward with deportation proceedings. After all, he could no longer work on the farm. And that was his only value to Canada.
We are here to do dirty, difficult, dangerous, and deadly jobs with very little protections. And the other thing is, when we get injured, it's so easy for our employer to send us back home. We're disposable labor. You can see perfectly how we are not considered to be humans. We are just a unit of protection. When it comes to dignity, everything is out of the window. You just come here as a well-oiled machine, and when you're no longer well-oiled, we cannot use you, go back home, let's replace you. And that's what the system is designed for, right?
Over the years, Gabriel saw workers get deported if they were perceived as slacking off at work. In addition, he heard occasional racist comments from supervisors to his colleagues. Quote, "Remember, we own you," is one that still sticks in his head today. And he saw the discomfort that many Leamington residents felt around him and the other mostly black and Latino farm workers on the Fridays when they were taken to town for a few hours to go shopping.
Rural Canada is white, and they will do any and everything to keep it that way. Any and everything to keep it that way. When it's convenient, what do we hear? Canada is the most diverse, most multicultural. But in truth and in fact, a lot of people are not welcome. Literally, it's only our hands that are needed. Only our hands that are needed and nothing else. Only our hands.
The relationship between migrant workers and the nearby towns have always been tense. Here's Chris Ramsarup again.
On a Friday night or a Sunday, you see thousands of workers in Simcoe, Ontario, coming in, being bussed in. They have about 2 to 3, maybe 4 hours to shop, and then they've got to get back. A lot of times, the community, local community, avoids the areas, whether it's Leamington or Simcoe, when there's lots of migrant workers around. There's lots of mythologies that workers are a threat, a criminal threat to the community. So they're there for a short period of time. The locals are not there. Leamington, for instance, many years ago had tried to pass a bylaw, a loitering bylaw, that would specifically target the migrant agricultural workers. It didn't follow through, but we've seen those type of potential steps being explored as a result of migrant workers.
Despite the tensions, Gabriel was desperate for community. Even though he's been skeptical of organized Christianity for most of his life, he decided to go to church. The Leamington Gospel Hall had always had an open door for everyone, including migrant farm workers. Gabriel quickly made friends there. He especially looked forward to seeing 2 young children who attended services.
Church gave me that opportunity to see something a little different. The people in the church, at least a few of them, were very welcoming, open, and it's all positive things. And I don't know, those 2 children that I was able to connect with in the church, it was, to me, that was church for me. Those 2 children in the church, that was church for me, right? And not the singing and the preaching.
It helped him a little bit with the pain he felt being away from his own family.
I keep telling people we're fighting 2 wars in Canada. One, difficult working and living conditions is one war. On the other hand, we keep worrying about our families. In our home country, we're accustomed to going to work, but at the end of the day, you report back to your family. To me, that's the worst injustice that migrant workers are facing wherever they are, right? Family separation.
Over the next few years, Gabriel continued to participate in activism with Justice for Migrant Workers, though always making sure his employers never knew about it. He made even more friends and connections outside of the bunkhouse. He became close to a French-Canadian man named Dennis, who he met when he bought some tools off of him at a garage sale. When he talked about his story and what being a migrant farm worker was like, his Canadian friends were always taken aback.
When he introduced me to all his friends and so on, when they heard our stories, slavery was a common word. They used words like, this is not illegal. They used all kinds of words because all of those words that they used was shocking. They didn't know it. And it's happening right there in their community, right under their nose, and they're not knowing it, oblivious to the realities of migrant workers, yeah? Because it's so quiet, nobody complain and so on. It's so quiet.
According to Gabriel and Chris, many Canadians are fed misinformation as to why these programs are necessary.
Employers and the feds and the provinces talk about we got to protect food sovereignty and food security. And it just laughed the shit out of me. Come on. Predominantly, the majority of farm workers that are coming through the TFW, temporary foreign worker programs, they're being employed in operations for export production, right? The greenhouse industry is for export production, whether it's in BC or here in Ontario. Tobacco is for export. Ginseng is for export. A lot of soft fruits and vegetables are for the United States. You know, this idea about food security, if we don't have migrant labor, our entire food system is going to go down the drain and Canadians are going to starve. Which is a fallacy. That's number one. Number two is this idea of a labor shortage. It is not about a labor shortage. It's about containing and control, which are very different things. They want a labor force that's available 24 hours a day. They want to control through these tied work permits, but ensuring that they create a group of people who live under fear and work under fear. They want to have workers who they could hire and fire whenever they want. We're dealing with a situation right now where a group of workers got sent home yesterday. They were here less than 3 months, and the employer basically was like, I don't want you guys anymore. Bye-bye. Right? So this is not about a labor shortage. This is pretty much about ensuring that they have total control over working conditions, living conditions.
Food is not a basic necessity in Canada. Food is a commodity, money-making. And that concept, that old teaching of it's a family farm or Canada has a cheap food policy, that is just a myth.
Eventually, Gabriel decided he wanted to do something that felt impossible for most migrant farm workers. He wanted to find a way to become a Canadian.
When I left my children, my son was 13 and my daughter was 11. After spending 4 years on the program, I realized no sign that my working conditions will improve. Nothing would improve. No sign, nothing would improve. But and at the same time, my children are big teenagers. And, you know, that's the time they transition from childhood into adulthood. And slipping from my fingers is something I had a tough time.
In 2014, he reached out to a lawyer who he heard speak about migrant worker issues on the radio. She took his case, and bit by bit, they built it up. He applied for permanent residency on humanitarian and compassionate grounds as a single father of two children. After years of uncertainty and effort, he became a permanent resident in December 2017. His children joined him in Canada a year and a half later. Gabriel became one of the less than 5% of migrant farm workers who end up gaining residency. And since then, he's used his freedom to work a dizzying array of jobs. He's worked at an industrial bakery, a juice plant, and a furniture factory. He's done construction, plumbing, fish cleaning, and custodial work. And he savors the opportunity to choose his employer, something he was denied during the years where he was a migrant farm worker.
Not having status means you're tied to your employer. If I have status, I have an open work permit. My employer knows well that I can work with anybody. So the pressure is now on my employer. You like my work? You do the things, he or she will do the things to attract me and keep me, right? They know I can work with anybody. And that's a beautiful thing about status. It gives us that element of power. And that's a beautiful thing. When I became a permanent resident, everything I was denied, excluded, and tied, it certainly changed. It revolutionized my life. And that is what we want. I was able to access basic dignity.
The one thing that's been a constant has been his advocacy for migrant farm workers. In 2016, Gabriel addressed a House of Commons committee about the perils of being a temporary worker on Canadian farms.
It is very hard for us to speak up when we have a bad employer or if we are not getting our full wages. Imagine how much harder it is when speaking up doesn't just mean losing your job. It means being forced to leave the country. Imagine how hard it is when your employer controls your housing and your contract is not enforceable. The Occupational Health and Safety Handbook of Ontario contains a lot of guidelines that came about as a result of several coroner's inquests into non-agricultural work-related deaths. To date, not one have been carried out for migrant farm workers who died in work-related accidents anywhere in Canada. Migrant workers contribute consistently to EI every week. However, we can't access any of these benefits. The one we can access have been revised downwards in such a manner that whatever we are getting is next to nothing. And there's so many issues, but ultimately, migrant workers are physically separated from their families and loved ones. This contributes to family breakdown of the migrant worker and the vicious cycle of poverty and social ills.
The primary demand that people like Gabriel and Chris have is that migrant farm workers should have status when they arrive in Canada.
I haven't been shy about using the word apartheid, and I think that this is a system of apartheid. We may want to call it other words, but very much this is a racial form of legal restrictions and exclusion. It's a separateness, right? It's an entire system that racially separates migrant farm workers.
To leave my children early teen, preteen, the 4 years, they literally slipped through my fingers, right? And up to now, I'm still trying to make up for that. The damage that was done is very difficult for me to repair.
As for Gabriel, he has hope that if Canadians hear the truth, that change will be possible.
Why am I an activist? For so many reasons. One, a lot of Canadians are not aware of the issues. And that's by design. So breaking the silence, we cannot change things if we don't talk about it. That's one. Can I go and sleep and wake up tomorrow and just get the things that we denied? No. It has been proven that anything, all the gains that we've had is because of fight. And in Canada, it's no different because we know very well the politicians, they're not loyal to their voters. They're not loyal to the workers. They're loyal to their donors. And the wishes of the donors are way different to the wishes of the workers. And that is why I'm an activist.
Thank you.
Gabriel has kept up the fight to get justice for migrant farm workers. He's spoken at rallies and given lectures to college students. And last year, he published a book, Harvesting Freedom, The Life of a Migrant Worker in Canada. It's the first ever of its kind in this country. There's one more reason that Gabriel thinks Canadians should be paying attention to what happens on our farms. He sees migrant farm workers as a vision of the future, a future that big business and governments want for all of us. After all, under the Trudeau government, the number of temporary immigrants has more than tripled to now make up 7.5% of all people in Canada.
But these are things that they've tried on us and they've been into mainstream employment. The government, the federal government in power right now, when they first got into office, what was the platform? Real change. I was done saying I wanted real change. When they got into office, what is the song that they were singing? The new reality.
And the precarity and absolute power that employers wield against migrant farm workers? Gabriel says that's just the dream of most employers in this country. And people like him, they were just the lab rats.
These are things that they've tried on us, and they've been into mainstream employment. And that's the reality. We are seeing it right there and then.
That's your episode of Commons. If you like this episode, please leave us a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. This episode relied on work done by Gabriel Oladua and Edward Dunsworth, Jillian Kessler-Damour at Al Jazeera, John Woodward at CTV News, Vic Sedgwick, and many, many others. If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us at CommonsPod. You can also email me, archie@canadaland.com. This episode was produced by me, Jordan Cornish, and Noor Azria. Our production coordinator is Andre Proulx. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Puglesi. And our music is by Nathan Burley. If you value this podcast, please support us. We rely on listeners like you paying for journalism. And as a supporter, you will get premium access to all of our shows ad-free, including early releases and bonus content. You'll also get our exclusive newsletter, discounts on CanadaLand merch, invites and tickets to our live and virtual events, and more than anything, you'll be a part of the solution to Canada's journalism crisis. And you'll be keeping our work free and accessible to everybody else. Come join us. Click the link in your show notes or go to canadaland.com/join. You can listen to Commons ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. This episode is brought to you in part by the Douglas Mattress. Now, I've said it before and I'll say it again. One of the best, and I mean the best things you can do for yourself is to get a good quality mattress. The time is now, people. Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress protector, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That's douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. This episode of Commons is brought to you in part by Canardian. What is Canardian, you ask? Well, it is a podcast that's gossiping about Canadian hometowns. Every episode, podcast producer and writer Katie Lauer is joined by various Canadian podcasting personalities to unravel the juicy stories about their hometowns from trusted sources like eyewitness testimony, community Facebook groups, subreddits, and Wikipedia. Nothing I say is fact-checked, but it is pretty dang entertaining. And you know who is a guest on this season of Canardian? Well, none other than yours truly. So if you are interested in the very important distinctions between Surrey and North Delta, if you want to learn whether or not I could outrun the Delta PD, well, This is the podcast for you. Listen and subscribe to Canardian from Pod the North right now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com